Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Wednesday, March 6th, starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back senior Trump correspondent for The Benny J. Show, Monroe Anderson. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, what's going on in art, politics, music in the city, you want to know what's happening this spring and summer all over Chicago, head to chicagoreader.com. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, he's there too, chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling it's Free Wednesday, and here's why. And I say it's Free Wednesday. I was laughing as I said it because I was reading an article in the Sun-Times. It was on, and it was also on WBEZ by Sarah Karp about Stacey Davis Gates, our dear friend Stacey Davis Gates, her appearance before the City Club. And I just love it when lefties come before the City Club. So Stacey Davis Gates, the head of the Chicago Teachers Union, the most left union in the city of Chicago, I would argue. And as a result, they are despised by the powers that be in this city. And pretty much like anybody who, like, I don't know, wants to believe in the system, you know, just cannot stand the Chicago Teachers Union. I recognize that. I realize that. And I happen to be a big fan of Stacey Davis Gates and the Chicago Teachers Union. So anyway, Stacey Davis Gates comes before the City Club. And so, you know, this is a chance for lefties to show that they're real people, too, as they meet. Well, my God, they don't have horns. Okay, they can talk. It was always kind of a funny thing when Karen Lewis would come for the City Club and the City Club would be like, let's see this leftist. Will she turn into Joseph Stalin? Will it be Lenin? Anyway, so immediately Stacey Davis Gates are talking about the new contract that the teachers are going to be out to negotiate. They want a librarian in every school. That seems pretty reasonable to me. Don't you want a librarian in every school? A nurse, a counselor, you know, a gym teacher, et cetera, and so forth. Like the basics. And the reaction of the city of Chicago is, we can't afford that. That's too much money. That's why nobody likes you lefties. So my advice to Stacey Davis Gates is just to do what the developers do when they want a new Bears stadium. This was the day before, okay? So on Tuesday, the Sun-Times had a story in which the developer who wants the new Bears stadium and White Sox stadium just said, oh, it's free. It's not going to cost you anything because TIFs aren't what they tell you it is, and that's not really real money. And so, you know, the Chicago public, oh, it wasn't the Sun-Times, Ben. It must be free. So, Stacey, that's my advice to you. Just pretend you're building a new White Sox stadium or new Bears stadium. Just go, it's free. Librarians in a school, counselors in a school, you know, nurses in a school, computer teachers in a school. It's free. It's just say it's from the TIF program, Stacey. Absolutely no one in the city of Chicago understands how TIFs works except for like five of us. All right. And mayors have been lying to the people of Chicago about the TIF program for all these years. Most reporters in the city of Chicago just assume that it's too complicated for any ordinary citizen to understand. And so they just keep repeating the same old inanities about it. So just take their page. Go, we're going to pay for it with TIFs. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. Whatever. If it works for a developer of the White Sox, it should work for lovers of public education who believe in the librarians and counselors and nurses in the school. I would think most people in the city of Chicago, except for the Paul Vallis crowd, believes that every school should have a librarian. Anyway, just say it's free. All right. Monroe Anderson is patiently waiting to come aboard and talk about national issues, right. Not local.
I have a better idea for the public schools.
Go.
How to finance it. Go back to the original design of the lottery and use all the money that it makes. If they said that's where it was going, and use that, and they'll be rolling on Easy Street.
You know what? You have a point there. Because this is only ancient people like me and Monroe remember this. But when they unleashed the lottery in the state of Illinois in the 70s, they said, it's going to be for education. It's going to pay all the education bills. And the dummies in the state of Illinois bought that line. And as soon as they got the lottery, then they just started using it for general revenues. And it didn't really supplant. It didn't support education directly. Just like they told us that the casino in Chicago is going to support a pension payments for police and fire. It's not going to cover, come close to covering that. They just lie to us all the time. And you're absolutely correct, Monroe. But the reality is there's so many people throw so much money away on gambling. Sports gambling is insane. You're right. If we just dedicated that revenue to education.
Right.
But I don't know. If you really were teaching people how to think critically, they wouldn't gamble in the first place.
Some would.
Some would.
Bill Cosby and Michael Jordan, for example.
Was Bill Cosby a gambler?
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that.
No, this was explained to me by a friend who was a reporter in New York.
Okay.
And so I knew this stuff. His theory was the reason Cosby's son was murdered. Remember?
Oh my God. Yeah, I remember that. It was horrible. Yeah.
It was a Russian mafia hit because Cosby owed the casinos a lot of money and they didn't want to kill him because he couldn't have paid it off. So they killed his son as a payoff.
You know what? We're going to be talking conspiracy theories in a little bit with your favorite congresswoman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, but that was facetious. It's not really his favorite congresswoman. But that, I don't, some of the conspiracy theories that just, they're not dictated. Well,
except why he would be killed with a flat tire on the expressway. Oh. I mean, he was hit. Not hit by a car. Hit.
Okay, so I'm not going to go down that path because I can barely remember the specifics about Bill Cosby's son, so I'm going to leave it alone. But I will say this. I remember when Michael Jeffrey Jordan retired for the first time in 1993. There were so many people, I know, ordinary people without any particular political affiliations, who told me, Ben, I know. And then they would always know something. Like some ordinary guy would know something that, you know, I didn't know, or nobody else knew. Somehow or other, he knew. My cousin told me, this is known, Ben. And it was because somehow or other, his gambling debts. So his father was murdered for his gambling. Right. Now,
that stems from Dick Gregory, who was a conspiracy nut. And there's all kinds of things going on.
He was maybe the one. I'm not going to blame Dick Gregory for, how do I put this? I'm not going to blame Dick Gregory because so many people believed such nonsense. Because think about it, Monroe.
Yeah.
The amount of cover up required to conceal the fact that Michael Jordan's father was, that Michael Jordan's father's murder was somehow or other connected to Michael Jordan's gambling debts, that Michael Jordan's gambling debts were.
I didn't hear that part, though. My Dick Gregory's theory, conspiracy theory, was the reason Michael, quote, retired and went to play baseball is because they were trying to take the heat off of him. on it. And so this was a means of
that the second, yeah, that was the second theory. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I didn't buy either at anyway, because you think the NBA wanted Michael Jordan to leave? He was the most popular player in the league. The notion that they wanted Michael Jordan, the most popular player in the league, to step down is preposterous in itself. Anybody knows anything about capitalism? Yeah. Oh, we're going to take our most popular player and ask him to leave because this is a controversial moment. Well,
Gregory thing was Michael left for that reason. Not that they wanted him to leave, but he had to chill out.
The actual conspiracy theory at the time was that the NBA commissioner, David Stern, got together with Michael Jordan and Jerry Reinsdorf and said, Michael needs to take a break from basketball. Could you just let him play baseball for a while and then he'll come back to basketball? Yeah. And that was theory, okay? Yeah. And I'm like, come on. Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But, you know, Americans will believe anything. They're about to elect Donald Trump again. So they will believe.
Absolutely. I'm going to elect Donald Trump.
Okay.
Republicans are going to. Going to make him let him run the party for until November, then it'll be over.
There's one of our listeners is urging that you have a quote unquote debate with David Ferris, who's a regular guest on the show as well, about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. But today's interview that I just finished with David Ferris, he was sounding a little bit more like you. He had reconciled himself to the fact that Joe Biden would be the nominee and that there was really nothing he could do about it.
Right.
And so on we go. All right. I before we get to the presidential, I must get your thoughts about Mark Robinson, who is now the Republican nominee for governor in the state of North Carolina. Before we went on air, you had some great riffs about Mark Robinson, which I really would love you to share with the listeners. So just so you know, Mark Robinson was the lieutenant governor. He is a black man, and he has said some of the most outrageous things.
He's not a black man. I canceled his black card.
You know, Monroe's got that authority, okay? Because he's a legend, right? He can do things like that. All right, take it, Mark Rob. Wow. I mean, listen, you said something before we began, and you said that it's like Herschel Walker was a more qualified candidate to be a U.S. senator than Mark Robinson is.
And smarter. Yeah. Because this guy, he has to be stupid to say the things he said. I heard a litany of them, and it's like, whoa, this is just incredible. He talking about a Uncle Tom, Step and Fetch It, Amos and Andy, Handkerchief Head Negro. He is it. Like, whatever you... everything white people want to hear, white crackers want to hear. This isn't your average run of the mill white people that want to hear this crap this guy is saying. I mean, it's like he's incredible.
All right, so as America's foremost authority on white people. Which is a title you've earned from your many years of living among white people.
I haven't earned it. It's self proclaimed.
So as America's foremost authority on white people, you are in a unique position to answer this question.
Okay.
And the question is this: why do so many white people love black political candidates like Herschel Walker and Mark Robinson? Go ahead.
Because it relieves them of the pressure of being racist in their heads or in other people's. The progress we have made as African Americans in this country is that it used to be proper to be a racist. You know, I don't like niggers. Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Me neither. Now it's not PC, although Trump's trying to bring it back, but it's not PC to be a racist. So what they do is, if you say something about them, then you are playing the race card. They're not racist. You're just playing the race card. Or if Mark Robinson says something that's just outrageously racist because a black person said it, then see, I told you it was true because this black person said it. Not only do I think it, but this black person said it. So it must be true.
Wow. So it validates their worst, it validates.
Right.
Do you think there's a, this is going to be really weird and twisted, and Sigmund Freud region, but do you think it's like there's an element of the white people who vote for Herschel Walker's and Mark Robinson's the world that do it because it makes black people look bad?
No, they do it because that's what they believe. What this person is saying, it's not like, let's make them look bad. It's like, I knew it. And this black person just validated my thoughts.
You know, and it's funny, that thing you said about PC, it's so bizarre and twisted. So let me relate two things that are in my mind right now. So Neil Steinberg, columns for the Sun Times, did a column today. I know you didn't see it because you don't read the bright one every day. But he did a column that talked about a Chicago Police Department video promoting the upcoming sergeant's exam. And in that video, there's a bunch of talking heads promoting the exam, and they're Chicago police officers and they're wearing police uniforms. They're talking. And I forget how many there are in the video, but none of them are white. And the response of many white officers is outrage.
Yeah.
The department's prejudiced, that they're sending a message, white people need not apply, et cetera, and so forth. So this is so bizarre because I'm sure these are the same people who would be denouncing any attempt to have include people who are usually left out. Right. So, in fact, one of the driving forces in the Republican Party is to denounce any corporation that tries to be inclusive.
Right.
And so now they're mad because if they feel the Chicago Police Department isn't including them. So they want to celebrate the same sort of diversity. They want to see that diversity in a Chicago Police Department video that they denounce when they see corporate America promoting, that they denounce when they see in a commercial that makes a point.
I'm sure these same guys who are complaining are against the DEI.
Yeah, DEI. They even gave it a name. Right. Yes. Yeah,
right. So the thing is, by birthright, by history, by practice, they have always been at the first front of the line. And now they have to stand in line like everybody else, and they don't like it. And so they have what they've done is borrow the strategy and rhetoric of those people who always had to go to the back of the line before, and they're applying it to themselves and saying, well, because these folks are at the front of the line with us, then it's not right.
Well, I this goes back to where we're sort of talking about regarding education and the need to invest in education because you want to promote critical thinking. And I think Americans don't want to believe in critical thinking because they don't do it for on themselves.
No.
They openly embrace inconsistencies and prejudices and biases while they say they're denouncing inconsistency, prejudices, and biases.
Right.
So there's no consistency between a person who denounces the CPD video for being biased against white people, who then turns around and votes for Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump because they despise corporations that are promoting diversity. Do you follow what I just said?
Who put their union chief in office? The police department's union chief.
Johnny Catanzaro, the head of the Fraternal Order of Police.
Right. You know,
I don't know. Answer your question. Where you get?
Yeah, they voted him in. The very police who are complaining now. I mean, he had to get the vote someplace,
he got their votes.
I can assure you, there weren't that many black cops voting for him. Be in charge of the union.
Yeah, and I understand I understand that point you're making. I shouldn't be surprised that people are so uncritical about their own thoughts. I, you know, constantly examine what I'm saying and what I probably do it too much.
You give them too much credit. It's not that they think of these as faults. They think of it as this is how it is. This is natural. This is how it should be.
I see.
So they're upset because they, deep down inside their hearts, they're still superior. And therefore, they should be in charge with a token here or there just to... So they can say, well, we're not racist, see, because in point, you know, I can't tell you, and this was not overt racism, but I can't tell you how many parties that Joyce, my late wife, and I went to over the years where we were the only black people at the party. And these white people at these parties had no other black friends or acquaintances. And so there we were. And it wasn't that we were tokens. I mean, they didn't invite us simply because we were black, but they invited us because we had some standing. And so have we been white, we've been invited to the party too. But we were some accomplished people who just happen to be black. And they didn't mind that. In fact, they're sort of happy about it because they could say, well, see, we're not racist. We got some black people here, two of them.
Well, now you're getting at one of my favorite topics. Ultimately, you're talking about the utter segregation of Chicago. I mean, since I've only really lived in Chicago my adult life, I can't compare it to other cities.
Yeah.
So I don't know the comparison test, nor do I care, actually, when I think about it, because I always make fun of Chicagoans who always try to dismiss the things that are really ugly about Chicago by saying, oh, well, bad. It happens in Cleveland, too. It's such a dumb Chicago reaction to... something hideous, but Chicago is a very segregated city. It's rare that whites and blacks intersect. In your term, in the case of you and Joyce, you guys are like top of your game professionals. Joyce Owens, one of the great artists in the city of Chicago. You know what I'm saying? Monroe Anderson was the press secretary. Yeah. So if anybody's going to cross over, if you will, it's you and Joyce. May she rest in peace. Yeah. You follow what I'm saying? So I'm not surprised that, you know, that like successful media types have parties and you would be invited.
Right.
You know, they didn't listen to you when you were telling the truth about the Tribune. You know that, right? You know what I'm saying? But they'll invite you to their party, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's Chicago segregated. You notice better than anyone. It's a weird city that sort of loves.
But you know, but it's not just Chicago. For example, I haven't been to Manhattan, but maybe a couple of years in the past 20. But back, say, in the 90s or 80s, if you walked around in Manhattan, 80s, let's say 80s, if you walked around in Manhattan, it was a rarity to see a black man in a suit and tie, meaning that he was a professional and had to wear the uniform to go to work.
All right, so now you're heading into, listen, I said I didn't want to go into the direction of saying other cities do it too. Right. You and I both lived in Chicago for most of our adult lives, so we know Chicago inside and out. And what I'm saying,
right,
there's a particular type of segregation that is very Chicago. It's a social segregation. I mean, we could do a whole show on this. There's restaurants segregation, there's movie segregation, there's music segregation, there's sports segregation. Like, you go to a Blackhawk game, you're not going to, I mean, except for the employees of the Chicago Blackhawks, you will not see any black people at a Blackhawk game, Monroe. You may, not literally any, but like one or two.
Oh, a few, right, exactly.
Yeah, you know. Right. You go to a Cubs game, you're not going to see many black people other than employees. You go to a White Sox game, you're going to see more black people than you will see at a Cubs game.
Yeah, because historically, besides just geography, but historically, the White Sox hired a black player before the Cubs did. And that had an impact.
I also think it has, I don't know, because we get into the whole, like the National League, the Cubs are in the National League, the White Sox are in the American League, the National League integrated before the American League, the National League had so many prominent, great black superstars throughout the 50s and the 60s before the American League. That's why they beat the American League so much in the 60s. But I can make that argument. To me, in Chicago, it comes down to that racial divide, and White Sox play in the South Side. The Cubs play in the North Side, and the Cubs make it, in my experience, when I've gone to Cub games with black people,
yeah,
I've felt the prejudice.
Yeah.
I've seen that prejudice that black people experience at Cubs games. I do not believe it's present at White Sox. But you see, you've never been to a White Sox. Have you ever been to a White Sox game?
Yes. When I was director of community affairs at BBM, I got invited to everything.
Man, he got invited. That's true. You go to Bears games.
I was almost as good a freeloader as Sergio Mims.
Oh, my God, man, rest in peace. That man.
Sergio could crash anything.
Sergio was the champ. May he rest in peace. But I do believe, like, there's a few aspects of Chicago, a few places in Chicago where you'll see a little integration. You know what I'm saying, Monroe?
I did back in the 70s. I can't remember now. But I did a piece for the Tribune magazine about this Bulls player,
Artist Gilmore, A-Train, okay,
right, yeah. Right, where he wasn't allowed to get into a disco on Rush Street.
Oh, my God.
Because they didn't know who he was, and, yeah, but he was black.
Oh, so, he was, man. He's 7'2".
Right, exactly. So they just saw the color of his skin. They didn't notice the quality of his height.
That is so true. I'll never forget that.
Right.
A-Train.
Right. So I did a whole article on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For which publication?
Tribune Magazine. That's when I was working for the Tribune.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Tribune, you have one article that was relevant. Okay. That was it.
Right.
Worthless newspaper. That was, that really brought it home when they were for some popular club on Rush Street. I don't even know what it's called. It was a pickup joint. And
that's why they specifically, black women, attractive black women could get in. But they didn't let black men, they didn't want black men in there because fearful that the white women might be interested in them and that the white men would be pissed off and it ruined their business.
You know what? Can we just give a shout out to Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor, Blazing Saddles? Where are the white women at? It's one of the greatest minds. It has stood the test of time. Where are the white women at? Oh, my Lord. But you're so right. You're so right. And that is so Chicago. And now, like...
And Studio 54 did the same thing.
Okay, so here, now you're doing that in New York.
Right, well, like, exactly. New York. No, Chicago is not uniquely racist.
You're that valid.
It is racist, but it's not that much a difference.
No, it's not. But there's some aspects of Chicago that are unavoidably racist. I hear what you're saying. I'm just so sick of the Chicago defense that other people do it. Chicago did elect a black man mayor before New York City did. So, you know.
Yeah, but briefly. It was a couple of years or so, 3 or 4 years. And then he got Giuliani'd.
David Dinkins.
Yeah, he got Giuliani. So,
but then look at Chicago, Monroe. This is the part they rewrite when they ever talk about Harold. Oh, they named the library after him. Oh, he's our greatest. As soon as he died, Chicago, all the white people in Chicago basically said, let's make sure this never happens again.
Right.
make sure this never happens again. And then they just kept voting for Daley and Rahm. So I think Chicago is particularly twisted, especially twisted on matters of race. And I'm not surprised that you went to many, many parties where you and Joyce were the only black couple.
This helped prepare me to become America's greatest authority on white people.
Foremost authority on white people. We turn to you whenever in doubt. Bro, help explain this to me. I need to understand. Why are white people doing this? Why are white people voting for Herschel Walker and Mark Robinson? I mean, come on. It's like, why, America? Why? Explain this to me. And, you know, there was a great riff. I forget who did it. It may be Joanne Reed. And it was just a great riff she went on. I'm sure you saw it because it was on MSNBC.
Yeah.
But so the discussion was... So explain to us, and then they always turn to her because she's like the one black person.
Right.
Explain to us why so many black men are voting for Donald Trump. And then she went on this counter riff, and she said, at most, I'm doing this from memory, and I'm paraphrasing, so I hopefully apologize, Joy Henry. At most, it'll be like, 12 to 15%, okay?
Right.
All right? So the real question is, why so many white people voting for Donald Trump?
Right.
It won't be black people who elect Donald Trump, but they'll get blamed for it.
Right.
They'll get blamed for it. Wait, white people, why are you voting for white women? This man is going to take away any abortion rights you have. Why are you voting for him? This man is a rapist. Why are you voting for him? Why, Monroe? Now I turn to you. Why are so many white people voting for Donald Trump?
He's white, he's rich, not as rich as he lies to be, but he's white and he's rich, and that makes him very qualified in their minds. When you stop, this is another thing that I know, that a lot of white women, not all white women, but a lot of white women are raised to look for white men of means. If you're a poor white man or working class white man or low middle class white man, you aren't as desirable as if you are a very rich white man. Barbara Walters said that her mother raised her. She told her, it's just as easy to fall in love with a rich man as it is a poor one. And that's how she was raised. And that's what she managed to do.
Did she marry a rich man? I have no idea. I don't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Rich enough, man. Yeah.
She made a good penny herself.
Barbara Walters. Right. But that's the other thing is, though, who you are sleeping with
mm-hmm.
can influence your social status greatly.
You know, I don't know how we got onto this path. I'm like in my mind trying to go, where was I when we went down this path and ended up here? And I can't retrace it in my mind. I know it started off with me seeking your counsel as America's foremost authority on white
people. Exactly. So
as to why white people embrace Donald Trump, I think it's connected to the response that Neil Steinberg noted in the video, that white people feel that they're the victims, that white people
that's broke butt white people feel that they're the victims because they used to, American history has been to tell poor white people that you may not be poor, but you're better than a nigger, basically. And that was the one comforting thing. They had no money. They had no status. But they always had the comfort that they were better than us. Well, thanks to Oprah and Michael Jordan and Barack Obama, that's a more difficult argument to make. And as a result of affirmative action, although the knock on affirmative action is that we get these positions, we aren't qualified for them, but we get them because of affirmative action. And otherwise a white person would have it. But anyway, they don't have that psychological support. And so they're pissed off.
Well, I can assure you that as America's second foremost authority on white people, second only to you, that attitude is widespread, crosses income boundaries as well.
Oh, I know. But it's not as pronounced, and it's said in the quiet room. Among the richest
among white people. Yeah. So for instance, I first really became face to face with this in the 70s and 80s when conversing with graduates of New Trier.
Yeah.
New Trier, just so people know, is the high school in Wilmette and Winnetka and the North Shore, very wealthy suburbs.
Right.
Exceedingly wealthy suburbs. It in terms of income, it's one that has been for years at the top, one of the top schools in school districts in the state in terms of just the highest per capita income per parent. And these white kids would look at me in total, absolute belief and certainty what they were saying, that they are victims. They are disadvantaged to black people because of affirmative action when it comes to getting into colleges, when it comes to getting into law schools and medical schools. And they would believe this. I'm like, how in the world could you, having grown up where you did and graduated where you came from, actually believe what you're telling me, that you're at a disadvantage?
Right.
I'm like, it's some serious brainwashing going on here. No
it's not brain
thinking to my point.
Yeah, right. Earlier. No critical theory thinking. That's thinking what it is. Like, right. Trump was demanding that Obama show his grades. Show his grades because surely he got there because of affirmative action. Although he was by any measurement, at least 10 times smarter than Trump.
No. Unbelievable. Barack Obama's one of the smartest public officials I've ever met.
Right.
Or seen. And it's so obvious. You know what I mean? It's just so obvious.
In fact, that was one of his impediments, is that he was too smart for his own good. And so he would fall into a professorial conversation or approach instead of like a regular guy.
No, it's so true. And going back to Chicago here, Chicago does not like its public officials to be too smart. You can be smart, but you can't act smart. So right. Like they love Daley. Oh, that's a guy, Daley. But they wanted Bobby Rush. Remember when Obama ran against Bobby Rush?
Right.
Bobby Rush beat him bad. Right. And they made fun of his name. You know, he was acting so high and mighty. Right. And then some of these same voters 8 years later are worshiping him. I mean, people in Chicago are weird, Monroe. And that goes for black people and white people. I'm sorry I said that. Okay.
Yeah.
Black voters on the South Side rejected Barack Obama when it came to running for Congress against Bobby Rush. Come on. What's that all about, Monroe?
Well, because Obama wasn't from here.
Okay, there we go. That's another Chicago thing.
Right, yeah. Exactly. He wasn't from here.
Yeah.
And Bobby was a local hero, remember? He was a Black Panther.
He was such a local hero. He got like what, 25% of the vote when he ran against Daley for mayor in 99? Come on, Monroe.
No, in the black community, he was not a hero. Being a Black Panther does not translate into heroism in white Chicago.
I'm wondering, I got to go look and see who won the black wards, Daley or Bobby Rush. In 1990, I understand what the larger.
No, Harold didn't win the black wars the first time he ran against.
That is correct.
Yeah,
that is correct.
Because there was this, you know, they didn't believe it was possible.
Yes,
like I can remember Derek Hill had a show Sunday morning show. It's called Sunday Morning Live, I think, on WBMX. I think was the call letters at the time. And one of the viewers called in and said, one of the listeners called in and said, Chicago wasn't ready for a black mayor. And this was a black man calling in and making this. And Derek just went off on him. He said, we're not ready. Well, what are we supposed to get ready? And who's going to tell you when we're ready? He just went off on a thing.
No, but let's analyze that, Monroe. That is. So what is that person really saying? Like, so many people have said things like that to me down through the years, black and white.
Yeah.
Okay. Chicago is not ready for a black mayor. What is he saying?
That's
like,
the racism. That's the entrenched racism. The embedded racism. It's like the conditioning. You know, for example, I was in South Africa back in 2007 on a press junket. Mm-hmm. And I met an African journalist, not from South Africa, but she's from Mozambique or Zimbabwe or someplace. I don't remember. But she was telling me how black South African students were disciplined and taught to be docile, basically. To go along and get along. That was their education. They were conditioned for that. Since she's from a different country, she look at it differently. And that has been the case here in Chicago for the longest, is that it just couldn't happen. You couldn't get it. White people didn't think you could get a black mayor. One of the reporters at the Tribune, when I was telling them that Harold could and would win the election, he told me to my face, I was thinking with my heart, not my head.
Yeah. See, but okay. But there's two separate points. One is, can Harold Washington win?
Yeah.
So if you've worked from the assumption that Harold Washington can't win because white people will never vote for him, and he needs some whites to be right. elected.
Right.
Then the issue, the next issue is, okay, well, who are you going to vote for? And this is very Chicagoan, what I'm about to say. And this crosses boundaries, white and black. It's not just black people think this way. I'm thinking right now of a conversation I had with a white man who has education. All right, so we can't say it's people who don't have education. I don't want to name his name because I don't want to embarrass him, because what he said I thought was so monumentally stupid, and I called him out on it as soon as he said it. He was talking about who he's going to vote for in the 2023 election, and he was trying to wait until he figured out who was likely to win, and then he was going to vote for him.
Right.
And I'm like, why would you care? What difference does that make to you?
Right.
It's not like you're going to win a prize
right.
if the guy you vote for wins. It's not like they give you something. Oh, Billy Bob, you voted for Brandon Johnson. You get this nice car because you voted for the winner. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's like, what do you care if you think in the back of your mind that Harold Washington can't win because white people won't vote for him and they're not ready to elect a black mayor, which they never apparently will be ready to elect a black mayor. So if you've come to that conclusion, what stops you from voting for him? Why would you not vote for him? Do you follow? I've never understood that mentality of Chicagoans. They want to vote for the winner. I have so many people go,
it's embedded racism. Spike Lee brought it up in Do the Right Thing, you know, and he's having the argument at the store or bar or something, but we have an argument, and he's naming this guy, this white guy's heroes, you know, Michael Jordan, et cetera. He's going and said, this is who you like and everything. But then on the other hand, you don't like black people. You say you don't like black people.
Yeah. No, it was the pizza parlor. But I'm making a different point. Like a black person saying, I'm not going to vote for Harold Washington because white people won't vote for him and he won't win,
right,
is throwing away his vote. If you think Harold Washington's the best candidate to be mayor of the city of Chicago, you should vote for him. You shouldn't worry if he's going to win or not. Like, they're not going to give you something because Daley won. It's like, Daley wasn't running in that election. It was Blandick. Blandick's not going to give you anything for your vote. It's just such a classic Chicago attitude that Chicagoans have that I've been hearing all these years. I'm going to vote for the winner. Why? Well, what do you care?
Well, yeah, but I don't know why that is human nature, but if you'll recall, black people broke with the Democratic Democratic machine and voted for Byrne against Blandick because of the snowstorm.
That was 2 years after this Harold Washington election, but you're right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And Byrne showed no respect for them.
Right.
And that's why she lost.
Right. Exactly.
There's no doubt in my mind when I look at the blunders that mayors have made that led to their defeat.
Right.
Lori Lightfoot not embracing Willie Wilson, never understand that. You and I have talked about that forever.
Right.
Jane Byrne not constantly telling black people in the city of Chicago, thank you for electing me in 1979. I will take care of you. What do you want? You know what I'm saying? It's like doing that. Huh? She went to Cabrini Green Monroe and she go, well, that takes care of that. You know, Cabrini Green, I got the black vote.
Right.
I just, wow, man. But you know what?
It's been a learning process. On both sides, with black people too.
Yeah.
Black people have come to understand they have power when they vote.
Oh my God.
Not all black people, but black people in general.
Yes. And by the way, I just want to promote a show we did with Helen Schiller and Billy Shea Brooks, who was a Black Panther. We did a whole show dedicated to the 1972 revolt. Nobody even remembers this stuff, where black people broke from the Democratic Party and voted for a Republican candidate for state's attorney named Bernard Carey to defeat Edgar Hanrahan.
Yeah, and I voted for Carey.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. He's the last Republican I voted for. 1980. I voted for him over Daley for state.
Yeah, he's the only one I've ever voted for.
I voted for the guy who ran. I voted for Charles Percy for Senate once. Anyway, neither here nor there. The point is
yeah, that I voted for Percy. I
think you voted for Percy in 78.
I wrote a piece about him later, and how a negative column about him because he was doing it. I can't remember it, but Axelrod reran it. I mean, used it, published it. He was handling whoever Percy
was. Paul Simon.
Yeah, Paul Simon. He was representing Paul Simon.
I can remember this. You wrote a column ripping Percy because Percy supported Epton over Washington.
Yeah.
Jesus, yeah. Man, my memory is weird. Yeah, and
because I forgot. Yeah. But then I've written so much crap that I forgot what I said. I've been true to my beliefs, but I can't remember topics and when I wrote them and what have you. I've done a lot.
So we have wandered all over the map. It's been an absolute delightful conversation. So let me just close by bringing it back to a subject matter that I'm going to really take the deep dive on tomorrow. So it's just as well I don't take it with Monroe. But Monroe, I love your thoughts on this. And it's infinite wisdom. The U.S. Supreme Court voted 9-0, one of the most bizarre, only Sigmund Freud can really adequately interpret it, decisions to throw out the Colorado decision and keep Trump on the ballot, even though he clearly violates the 14th Amendment. And he's obviously an insurrectionist, and they didn't even deliberate on the insurrection part. It was a horrific, I think it'll go down in history as one of the worst Supreme Court rulings. And there's Dred Scott, you know, and everything else. So go ahead. Monroe.
If we rewind, you will remember that I said that this is how it would go down. But I read, initially I was 100% in favor of the 14th Amendment. But then there was some article, there was an article written where the person who wrote the article said that if they kicked Trump off the ballot, then one state would have decided the fate of who was going to be president, and that was not a wise thing. Therefore, he hoped that the Supreme Court would not only not allow the 14th Amendment to be successful, but that it would be unanimous, that all of them would do this. And this is what happened. And it's because, and I saw the logic, and that's when I changed my mind. I saw the logic in that if you get to a point where a single state can determine the course of the nation, we would really be in a mess because you get Alabama or Mississippi voting on something. We have a different story. Okay.
Wow. I mean, I could annihilate this position. I annihilated it the last time you said it. I'll do it again. Obviously, I didn't annihilate it enough because you still believe this nonsense.
Exactly, right.
All right. So let me just say this. Okay. First of all, that current system exists right now. Right now. In Illinois, Michael Joseph Madigan and his lawyers successfully booted Ralph Nader off the ballot. Okay. Presidential election, one individual state using state laws governing ballot access. They kept him off the ballot. Why? They were open about it. They didn't want him siphoning votes for Democrats. They didn't want it hurting the Democratic cause. They did exactly what Colorado did. Okay. They got involved in a federal election.
But so did it go before the Supreme Court?
No, because nobody in the world thought you couldn't. That was not within Illinois' right.
Yeah.
I don't even think if again, this, I don't even think those dimwits on the Supreme Court think that it's not Colorado's right to boot Donald Trump from the ballot if he violates the law. They're just making that up because they want to justify keeping Donald Trump on the ballot. The Supremes have thrown away their, you talk about illogic. It doesn't make sense. And by the way, the last time you said this, I'll repeat what I said. I welcome that. I welcome Alabama kicking Biden off the ballot. I welcome Mississippi kicking Biden off the ballot. Every single red state, kick Biden off the ballot. Every single blue state, kick Trump off the ballot. Let the election come down to five swing states. And that'll show how incredibly illogic and anti-democratic our electoral college is. But somehow or other, Colorado holding Trump accountable for violating a constitutional amendment is more anti-democratic than what? The Electoral College, in which the loser gets to win? Come on, Monroe. You got to admit, this is an absurd situation.
I first of all, I told you why I thought it was going to go down this way.
Not that you believe it.
Not that what I said was that it moved me from fully believing it to at least I was comfortably ensconced on the fence. Oh,
Lord. You know what? You've been watching.
I have my easy chair up there.
I can't say it's the worst decision because I'm going to ask. I can get Del Marie Cobb's view in this one because obviously there's so many Dred Scott I was thinking of, but this one is pretty bad, man. So what about my idea? Let's just have five states decide who's the president. What do you think? Don't you think that's it's a lot cheaper, you know, than going through the pretense of. I mean, if it's coming down to a swing state.
Over the years, those states shift, change. You know, where you had Illinois used to be a Republican state. California used to be a Republican state. So things change. There are going to be changes in some of these southern states. It looks like North Carolina is about to get itself a Democratic governor.
They have a Democratic governor right now. Their problem is the gerrymandering has locked in the legislature to the Republican Party.
Right.
Speaking of inconsistencies that the Supreme Court has allowed. Right. But yes, you're correct. That's a valid point that states change because of the new populations and people moving in. So you're right. Illinois was a swing. I don't know if it was Republican state so much as a swing state, but your point.
But I mean, it was thing. Yeah, no, it wasn't a red state. No,
it wasn't a red state.
It was a swing state. You couldn't. Yeah.
It was hard to predict. You couldn't count on it being Democratic. Is what
right.
Yes.
Yeah. We had Big Jim Thompson.
Yes, we did.
Eggers.
Jim Edgar. Yes, we did.
Edgar.
George Ryan.
Yeah.
I didn't vote for any of them. I did this Democrat to my own detriment. All right, Monroe, we've run out of time. And so there's no time to discuss. I love talking baseball parks with you and the ongoing White Sox Bears handout. But you know what? There's always next week. So we'll get to that.
Right.
And then your thoughts on Mitch McConnell. We'll get to that next week. That's not going anywhere. And a few other things that were on my list.
Well, yeah. In a word for McConnell, cracker.
And as I said, he's America's foremost authority on white people. So he's
and I will discuss that more next week if you'd like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Love to take the deep dive. What exactly do you mean by that? All right, very good. That's Monroe Anderson, a Chicago legend and dear friend every Wednesday on the Ben Jarofsky Show. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job, and Monroe agrees with you when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, catch up on all previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J bonus interviews, check out columns written by the man himself, all at chicagoreader.com. If you want to follow Ben on Instagram, it's at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.